Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you love listening to vinyl records but wish you had a better way of storing your collection, check out Records on Walls. This Canadian company has created a sleek, simple framing design with no glass that allows you to quickly and simply display your records. They're easy to install on any surface, they fit double LPs and gatefolds, and each unit sells for as little as $7. So, if you love your vinyl and want an accessible way of showing it off, check out recordsonwalls.com.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
Hey, how you doing there? You doing okay? I'm doing just fine. Before I tell you a little bit about this episode, I want to send a special shout out to Toronto's Frank Viva. Frank Viva is an artist who is actually an author, children's author. He's appearing at the Eden Mills Writers Festival September 15th in the village of Eden Mills. And you can learn more about his appearance at edenmillswritersfestival.ca. But Frank is an illustrator as well, and he often does the covers for The New Yorker. And I'm just looking at my issue of the September 2nd New Yorker, and there's Frank. He's drawn this thing. It seems to be an ice cream stand at Coney Island. And there's a guy and a dog is eating some ice cream that's fallen. Anyway, go to your magazine stand or check your mailbox if you subscribe to the... Do you subscribe to The New Yorker? I feel like this subscription is winning. I can't keep up with it. I can't read every issue. I want to. Can't do it. I don't know why I'm telling you this. Anyway, congrats. Congrats to Frank Viva. And thanks for being good. On the show today, Mark Arm. Mark Arm of Mudhoney and I have a chat about the band, their 25th anniversary. They've got some shows coming up in support of their latest record, Vanishing Point. And someone made a documentary about them at the end of last year. Now someone's written a book, a biography about them. So people love Mudhoney. I love Mudhoney. I'm going to go see them in Toronto when they play at Lee's Palace, so very exciting. So here we go, me and Mark Arm. Now. Hey, this week's episode is brought to you by Pizza Trocadero. For my money, the best pizza you can eat in Guelph, Ontario. A proud independent family business run by a punk rocker, Trocadero only uses a rich array of fresh ingredients cut by hand and homemade dough made daily, all baked to perfection inside of a stone oven. It's gourmet panzerotti, calzones, wings, salads, garlic bread, breadsticks, and oh man, the pizza. Personally, I like the gourmet Domateo with goat cheese, artichoke, roasted red pepper, mushrooms. I sub out the turkey breast for eggplant, but that's just me. Wash the whole thing down with a brio. Man, I am getting hungry just talking about this. Call Pizza Trocadero at 519-829-2444. Visit them at 7 Municipal Street in Guelph and online at trocaderoguelph.ca. TrocaderoGuelph.ca. That's Pizza Trocadero, a place of the good trade. Mark Arm is a singer and guitarist based in Seattle, Washington. 25 years ago, he co-founded Mudhoney, one of America's best and most influential underground rock bands. They were profiled in a great documentary called I'm Now, The Story of Mudhoney, which was released at the end of 2012. And now, they're the subject of a biography called Mudhoney, The Sound and the Fury of Seattle by author Keith Cameron. The book covers the entire history of the band right up to their ninth album, the rollicking, well-received Vanishing Point, which came out earlier this year via Sub Pop Records. Mudhoney's latest tour brings them to Montreal's Il Matour on September 1st and Toronto's Lee's Palace on September 2nd. And here now to discuss this further is Mark Arm. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good, Vish. How are you?
I'm well, I'm well. It's nice to speak to you again. Where in the world are you?
I am at the Sub Pop Warehouse in Seattle, Washington.
Oh, nice. How's work going today?
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Is it going especially well, or are you trying to look on the bright side?
It's going all right. You know, I finished up a couple of international orders, and right now I'm doing an interview.
Okay. So it's not a bad day. All right. Well, I do want to take a second to wish you a happy 25th anniversary.
Oh, thank you very much. We usually mark that in January, because that was like the first time the four original members practiced together was like on New Year's Day in 1988.
Yeah, I remember you and I spoke in, I think, December of 2012, so I couldn't quite wish you a happy anniversary then. It was too early. And now,
too early. You know, Steve and Dan and I had been like practicing together probably since November of 87.
Oh, okay. So then I was kind of on the money. I was closer then than I am right now. Now it might have been.
Well, you know, it's still the same. It's still the year, you know.
Well, I don't mean to be untoward. Well, are people making a big enough deal about this for you?
It feels like a lot has been made of it. It's been kind of a crazy, like last year, I guess, from, you know, the idea that there's this documentary out on us and a book and, you know, we got a new record and the Sub Pop's 25th anniversary where we did weird shit like play on top of the Space Needle and, you know, had a couple free shows around town that were all ages and open to everyone.
Special stuff.
Yeah.
The Space Needle show, was that part of the Sub Pop Silver Jubilee celebrations?
Yeah, it was 2 days before the actual blocking off of the Georgetown neighborhood and having all the bands play. So it was kind of in the run-up to it, yeah.
Okay, and so you played, how did it work? You went up the Space Needle is like a tower in Seattle, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
You went up the tower and played at the top, is that how it worked?
That's exactly how it works. And the roof, most of the roof is kind of a sloping thing, but there's this little part of it in the center that's about 25 feet in diameter, but the middle of that, it's sort of like a donut that you can't, like, there's not a hole, but there's like the needle protrudes out from the middle of it, and that takes up probably another 6 feet in diameter, so you end up really with about like 9 feet from that thing to the edge to work with.
So it was a slight logistical challenge to actually play it as a venue.
Well, you know, I went up there a couple times to see, one, to see if it was like the first time, just to see if it would be feasible at all. And then once we decided it was, and went up there with people from KEXP and our sound engineer and our tech guy to like see where we could set up, and we brought up a rigger with us because the last couple of stories are pretty much straight up, and it would be really hard to be carrying amps up there.
Mm-hmm. So it was, okay, so it was a bit of an adventure. It sounds like it was an adventure. You know, a lot of people, when there's like a tourist kind of landmark in their city, you know, if they live in the city, they have very little interaction with that touristy landmark. What has your relationship been like with the Space Needle as a longtime resident of Seattle?
Oh, I think I probably went up it a couple times when I was a kid. I actually got like a gift certificate for, there's a restaurant at the top that spins around slowly. And my wife and I went there for our anniversary. That was a couple weeks after playing on top of the Space Needle.
Oh, Weird. So you had a bunch of interaction with the Space Needle in this
a long time ago, and then some very recently.
Okay.
And then none for a very, very long time.
Well, that's interesting. The Space Needle is some kind of homing beacon for milestones for you.
I guess so. At least it was this year.
Yeah, at least this year. Was it a significant wedding anniversary as well? I mean, they're all significant. But
they're always significant. It was 19.
Okay, there you go. As I recall, you when we were speaking about the 25th anniversary, the impending anniversary of Mudhoney, you're like, why do people make such a big deal about 25? It's just a number. 24 is just a special. So maybe 19 is just, that's 19 is the new 20. I don't know. So that sounds like you've been doing a lot of special stuff for the anniversary. Has Matt Lucan been involved, your original?
He hasn't played or anything, but he came down. I think he came down to Georgetown. He didn't come to it. We played a show at the Mural Amphitheater last weekend. He didn't come down to that because it was his birthday. He apparently just got drunk and went home early.
Okay, no, I'm just curious if there. Yeah, that sounds like something, based on what I know of him, which is only, I don't know him at all, but that sounds like something he would do.
Yes, it does, indeed.
So, yes, we've discussed that first there was this movie, then there's this book. Can you, a lot of sort of talking about your history in the last year, as you mentioned. What can you actually tell us about the book?
Well, I haven't read a finished copy. I read like an early galley copy and help and send in some corrections and stuff. I'm not sure if my advice was taken. apparently a copy of the book is on the way. Well, I know it's like it's getting released in the UK like a good half a year before it comes out over here.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, let's backtrack a second. You say you made suggestions and corrections. Corrections seems self-explanatory. What kind of suggestions might you
have? Oh, well, I mean, no real suggestions, but corrections. Like,
okay.
There's actually, this happened in this year or whatever.
Okay. All right.
Just that kind of nitpicky sort of stuff.
And what can you tell us about Keith Cameron, the author of this book? How does he have any particular relationship with the band other than being a fan? Do you know him?
We met him the first time we went to the UK. He was a writer for Sounds, and he was there at the quote unquote riot that happened at the School of Oriental African Studies mm-hmm. that we played. Mm-hmm. It was just basically a stage that collapsed and people got a little enthusiastic, but he was like, one of the people who was like trying to maintain order and. it's funny that he was there to cover the show and then all of a sudden got enlisted into actually working.
Right. Wow. Okay. So this moment struck him as this was obviously something that was key in his life because it triggered a whole book.
Well, I don't know if that triggered the book, but I think the book might start off with that.
Oh, okay. Just his recollection of the supposed riot. Yeah. Well, that's an exciting way.
Yeah.
Exciting way to start the book. So you've had a movie. There's a book. You've put out records. So what other mediums can Mudhoney explore that I'm not thinking of? Is there something else you need to do?
I'd really love to do a podcast someday, just be on a podcast.
Well, I have some news for you, Mark. You're on a podcast right now.
Holy shit.
Yeah, you could say.
Wow,
you could actually say that because you're on a podcast. It's like it's like the Wild West.
Oh my God! I think I've covered everything. I think I can die happy now.
Have you not been on a podcast until now? I feel that seems like a travesty.
I don't know. It's hard to tell where everything goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that from in all aspects of life. Has all of this reflection by others, because I feel like a lot of the celebration of the anniversary seems to be coming from external forces. You know, people are making movies, people writing books about you. But has all of that reflection made it hard for you and the band to concentrate on the present and the future, like just the things you need to do?
No, not really.
You
there's no real elaboration on that, I guess. No, you know, we just do what we do, and every once in a while just kind of like go, it's weird, that's happening.
Yeah. Well, when you're sent a galley of a book that is a biography of your working life, I mean, on some level, you've got to kind of get into it, right? You've got to...
Yeah. I mean, I think it was like stranger dealing with a documentary, just because that was the first time something like that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time the book happened, I was like sort of used to the idea of this sort of examination of our work or whatever it is that we do.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I mean, you just have these people buzzing around you trying to figure you out, basically. Figure out what makes you tick and all that sort of stuff, I assume.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's an interesting year. We're also celebrating the 20th anniversary of Nirvana's In Utero, which, you know, I know you don't have anything to do with, but you did have a kind of a proximity to the band. Your histories are kind of intertwined. Does that milestone mean something to you?
Absolutely not.
Not in any way.
No.
Well, because
it means nothing to me.
What did you make of that record when it came out?
You know, I don't really remember listening to it very much at all.
Oh, okay. I don't know the history in terms of, like, you have to understand where I'm coming from a little bit in that I recently spoke to Steve Albini a great length about this record, and then also spoke to Chris Novoselic about it. So I kind of have it on my mind. And,
Right.
And that's all. That's all there is to it, really. I guess I'm just curious if, and I don't know if you were as connected to the band towards the end of their existence, I guess. But yeah.
We definitely weren't.
Oh, you weren't? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't realize that. Well, I just was curious because it's a lot of us are kind of celebrating this as a. It seemed like an important record to come out of your community. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
But I appreciate that you don't want to talk about it. Well, what's next for you? What's next for you and the follow up to Vanishing Point?
You know, just intermittent touring whenever we can. Like we managed to fit in 4 days worth over Labor Day weekend. Part of which will be spent in Canada and Toronto and Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And then in September, we do a 10-day tour around Gonerfest that goes from D.C. to Texas. And we're going to Australia and New Zealand for the Big Day Out Festival and a couple of shows on our own in January. Oh, and we're playing some, like, 5 Northwest dates with Pearl Jam in the first week of December.
Okay, so you've got mostly touring plans at this point. There aren't there aren't writing or recording things to discuss at this point.
Not at this point.
Okay.
But we should probably actually think about moving in that direction so we don't take 5 years between records.
I was going to say, some bands have a tendency when as their time becomes more precious. They actually work more, like they actually become a little more prolific. Like some bands who have taken as much time as you guys normally take between records start to ramp it up a little bit. Is there a move towards that?
There isn't at this point. It's kind of difficult for us to just get together more than like once every 2 weeks.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Once a week, if we're really on a roll,
mm-hmm.
Steve moved down to Portland, so that's like 6 hours away, or 3 hours away. It's a 6-hour round trip anytime we want to practice. And, you know, he's got kids to take care of and a bunch of stuff to do down there that he can't just take off.
Right. So it just makes it harder to actually write together.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's
Because we're a band that doesn't have like a primary songwriter. We're a collaborative unit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I like working that way. I prefer working that way. I think allowing other people to express their ideas, let something happen that ends up being generally cooler than. Like, if I just come with a whole song from top to bottom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's you're saying it's basically, it's a collaborative band, so if the band can't collaborate, it doesn't really happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what about you? Are you usually keep yourself busy. Are you doing other stuff beyond Mudhoney?
Yes, but not musically.
Oh, what are you up to?
Oh, you know, just doing stuff with my family and trying to go surfing as much as possible.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I meant sort of artistic kind of expression, not necessarily. Well, I mean, raising a family, I can tell you, as someone who's trying to do it now, there's a little bit of artistry involved.
There's kind of artistry in surfing, although I'm not at the point where I can express that.
How long have you been?
I have these desires, but I just can't make them happen.
I think the ultimate desire for you might be to end up surfing on a podcast. I think that would be
I don't know how you would do that, but if you can figure it out.
How long have you been surfing?
About 7 years.
Oh, okay.
And maybe only started doing it with any frequency about 3 years ago.
How often do you go?
Well, this summer I've been going whenever I can, which is probably usually like every other weekend or something like that.
Oh, okay. And you're right by the ocean there. You got good waves near Seattle?
The closest place is 2.5 hours away. Seattle's on the water, but it's not the open ocean.
Yeah.
So we have to, it's as if we were in Vancouver or something. So you have to go to the other side of Vancouver Island to get to the surf.
So what,
you know what I'm saying?
How did you end up at a point where 7 years ago, you're definitely a man that's a little bit older than me. How do you end up taking
it? Definitely.
I was just taking,
I think I grew up like skiing and skateboarding and then eventually snowboarding. And I always kind of felt like even when I was a kid skiing and skateboarding, you know, I would watch like surfing on TV and just think like that is like the third leg of the stool, you know what I mean?
Sure.
That's the other third leg of the stool. That was a really dumb fucking analogy. But, it's like these sports are really related to each other.
Yeah, and, I understood. I mean, in my mind, I'm like, why does the stool only have three legs? But some stools have...
Because the three-legged stool is more stable than a four-legged stool.
That's true, is it? I'm not... Are you sure?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, because... Even if one on a three-legged stool, if like one of the legs is like a hair shorter, another it's not going to be rocking around. Like it, you know, it's still going to be
distributes the weight better.
Just try it. Just to get yourself on a three-legged stool.
My son has a three-legged
feel
stool.
The difference.
No, my son has a three-legged stool up in his room, and he's 2 years old. And sometimes he stands on it, and he wipes out.
Shave one of the legs off and see if you can like make it rock back and forth.
Every time I look at it, I'm like, oh, if only it had a fourth leg. That's what I think, and now you're telling me the opposite. All right, well, that's interesting. It's cool that you've come up with a catalog of items, sporting items that require kind of balance and speed, and you're chronicling them all. You're just gathering them all up so that you've done them all.
I guess so. Well, one thing that I like about surfing is it doesn't hurt nearly as much as when you fall skateboarding.
Yeah, well...
And at my age, that's a big deal.
Sure, yeah, exactly. That's what I was sort of alluding to earlier when I made a slight intimation that you were older than me. Because, yeah, I don't want you to hurt yourself because it might take longer to recover, you know?
These hips are fragile.
Aren't the Pearl Jam guys are surfers, aren't they?
Yeah, Jeff's a skateboarder. I mean, he's got, like, in his property in Montana, he's got, like, two bulls.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. But you haven't talked skating or surfing with that band.
We're both going to be in Australia together, so I'm going to ask Eddie if he's going to be surfing. There's going to be plenty of time, it looks like.
Oh, cool.
And see if I can hitch a ride with them when they go.
Nice. All right. Well, good. It sounds like you're totally right. Mudhoney can take its time. You've got other stuff to do, including surfing. You don't need to make records. You're surfing. That's good.
No, that's much more important.
One of the key dates that stuck out for me on your tour schedule is in Nashville in September. You're playing at a Third Man Records.
Right.
And historically, traditionally, when people play Third Man Records, live records emerge shortly thereafter. Is there talk of doing that?
No, that's I guess the whole point.
Is that the only point? Like, I know they have a performance space, but I didn't know
that was the whole offer to us was if you want to play here, you got to put out a record.
Oh wow! So how does that?
Well, I mean, you get final say. Like, if you feel like your performance sucks for whatever reason, they won't put it out. But. We're pretty easy.
Yeah, it's like a direct to acetate setup or something. Like, don't you get a record like the day of after you're done or something like that?
They have that, but also I've heard that they back stuff up also.
Oh, okay.
Just in case that doesn't work.
Okay, and so who extends the invitation to you? You know, Third Man we associate with Jack White, and some of us might assume that he has a lot of say in those decisions. Did he reach out to you, or was it someone else?
I don't remember. It wasn't Jack White. It might have been Ben. And didn't reach out to me personally. I think they talked to Todd, our booking agent.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that's cool. So that
this whole thing with Sub Pop, and is this something Sub Pop's into, you know?
Yeah, because you got like a legal logistical situation with two labels. There,
yeah. Right? And like King Tuff has done it before, so, you know,
yeah,
it was easy to work out.
I have the Conan O'Brien one. I know that. And I think I have Jeff the Brotherhood did one. That one's really good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
What did Conan O'Brien do?
Well, it was part of that. He did a tour, right? He did a tour after his show was canceled. I actually went to one of the shows. I obviously didn't go to I didn't go to the Nashville one, but I went to the one in Toronto. And it was like a review style show. And he just did like kind of covers and interpretations of kind of classic songs.
It wasn't like Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. For 20 minutes?
No. It wasn't. I mean, there was comedic elements, but no, it was just like, I'm going to do like Poke Salad Annie, but I'm going to put new words in it and that kind of thing. You know, like he just likes like Elvis songs and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know if you follow Conan. Have you seen his show? You've been on that show, haven't you?
Yeah, in like 95.
Okay. Yeah, he just likes like classic kind of stuff. So he does, it's mostly that kind of stuff. Like I remember when I saw him, he did a version of On the Road Again, like the Willie Nelson song, but it was like, I want to have my own show again. Like he kind of was doing that kind of thing, you know?
Oh, right.
Yeah, just like kind of silly bits. But anyway, him and Jack White are super tight. So he also put out I don't know why we're talking about Conan, but they also put out they put out a comedic 7-inch Third Man did. And it's kind of cool. And I'm supposed to talk to them. I'm supposed to talk to them about their, I'm really into their Blind Willie McTell and Charlie Patton reissues that they've been doing down there.
Oh, I'm totally unaware of that.
Oh, wow. Man, it's great. They're doing four. It's called the complete chronological collection of song music recordings. I'm sorry, I don't know the full title, but it's like complete chronological recordings. So it's every single recording each of them have done, and it's spread over four 12-inch vinyl records.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I got this Charlie Patton box set, like CD thing that came out years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm aware of that. That thing's a heavy-duty heavy-duty thing, yeah. Yeah, and when I heard...
So would it be different than that?
I think it...
Or would it just be like on...
I believe it's the same, but it's on vinyl, and I don't know. It's a little confusing, because isn't that Charlie Patton box like 7 CDs or something?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, so I don't know how they fit that much material. Like, I look at the track listing...
Well, some of the Charlie Patton boxes, like, I think one disc is, like, people who were influenced by Charlie Patton.
Oh, you know? Okay. Yeah, because I wondered how they fleshed out that box. My friend had it, and I never... At the time when it came out, it was a fair amount of money. And I decided not to get it. But then this thing came along, and it's great. It's just really, you know, Third Man have a pretty nice aesthetic going on, you know, like all the records.
Oh, yeah.
They look cool, and they sound great. And so I'm pretty stoked about it. And you mentioned Ben, and I've been corresponding... I owe him an email. He sent me an email today, so I got to write him back. But because I said, hey, I want to talk to someone about these reissues. So I don't know, Ben. You know Ben? At Third Man?
Yeah.
What's his deal?
Ben, the guy who also like drums with the Dirt Bombs.
Right.
Him?
Yeah. It's
right,
him? Right, okay,
yeah,
it's him.
Yeah.
And he has something to do with Third Man. Okay. I don't know.
Yeah. I think he's like Jack White's cousin or something like that, or nephew. There's some weird familial thing.
Okay. I see. I didn't know. I just wrote to the Third Man general address and then saw that, basically I saw that he wrote, and then I've been kind of busy, so I haven't had a chance to write back yet. But now I'm talking to you about my inbox, Mark. This is what podcasts are like. Podcasts are just like, let's talk about whatever, and it's great. Well, anyway, it sounds, so what this ultimately means, your visit to Third Man, is that somewhat soon there might be a Mudhoney live record that comes out.
Yes.
But do you know when? I mean, obviously there's a lot of factors, but do they give you a timeline?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll find out once we get in there.
That's cool.
I know I spoke to the Melvins guys, who were one of the first bands to do it, and they said it was a really cool experience.
Yeah, I just saw that they were one of the first bands to do it. I thought that just came out, didn't it? I just got a newsletter that mentioned the Melvins release, but I don't know when they did it. Anyway.
Maybe I was lied to, or maybe I misunderstood something.
Well, it could have been recorded quite a while ago. I just saw that in the announcement about the Charlie Patton and Blind Willie McTell records that I just mentioned to you, it included... And also the Melvins thing. So I was like, oh, cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Because Charlie Patton, Blind Willie McTell, and the Melvins are three of the greatest blues artists out there.
Don't forget Mudhoney. I feel like Mudhoney is getting short shrift in your statement there. But yeah, I think you're right. I actually think you're right. That actually is true on some level, I believe. Anyway, I want to let people know, once again, Mudhoney are the subject of a new book called Mudhoney, The Sound and the Fury of Seattle by author Keith Cameron. And their most recent album is a great one. It's out on Sub Pop. It's called Vanishing Point. The band is at Montreal's Il Matour on September 1st and Toronto's Lee's Palace on September 2nd. And you can learn more about them at mudhoneyonline.com. Mark, if we were to go to a new song from Vanishing Point, what would you like to hear?
The song that's kind of been giving me the biggest thrill lately, I think, has been The Only Son of the Widow from Nain.
Oh, and why has it been giving you such a thrill?
It's super fun to play live.
Okay. It's just fun to play. All right, well, let's find it. That might be apparent when we hear it now. This is Mudhoney with The Only Son of the Widow from Nain. And Mark, it's always a great pleasure to speak to you. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Vish.
I'm coming back.
Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, VishKreative. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca or if you're in the KW region at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkhanna.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.